Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets. My not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. It's monsoon season here in the Mojave, and you might think of monsoon season as something you find in places like Southeast Asia and the jungles and subtropical climes, but we get them too out here in the desert. The last two nights have been absolutely spectacular. That is, if you enjoy lightning and thunder, a tremendous light show over the Las Vegas Valley. Unfortunately, heavy rains and strong winds have caused a lot of damage, flooding intersections, knocking down trees, knocking down power lines. They've left thousands of homes without electricity here. I mention this only because we had predictions from the weatherman of a similar storm for tonight, even bigger than the last two nights. Hasn't materialized yet. I peeked out the door about 5 minutes ago, and it's pretty calm out there, but I wanted to mention it just in case I get knocked off the air. You might have an idea why. I don't think it's going to happen, but I figured I might as well mention it because I have known to have some bad luck with these kind of situations. If you have seen the news from my neck of the woods here lately, you might know we've been buried under clouds of thick smoke in this valley because of a ferocious wildfire that's been burning in the mountains for the last week or so just west of the valley. More than 40,000 acres have scorched, followed in that area by heavy rains that caused mudslides and flooding and then heavy storms down here in the valley. So you put it all together, we've had fires and floods, thunderstorms, lightning strikes, mudslides, all in the course of a couple of days. And I tell you, if I start seeing locusts buzzing around the house, I'm packing a bag and heading for the hills, or maybe head down to the bomb shelter or something. My hometown was sort of the center of the UFO universe this weekend. The Mutual UFO Network, the world's foremost investigative organization dedicated to resolving the UFO mystery, held its annual international symposium here in town. First time in 24 years that MUFON has been back here. I was able to get over to the gathering a little bit on Friday and Saturday. Great lineup of speakers, including some scientific heavyweights who shared their opinions and findings. One of those who appeared was Dr. Eric Davis. He's a physicist that I've known for several years. He used to live here in Las Vegas when he worked for NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science. He's been a scientific advisor to the U.S. Air Force, to all kinds of government labs and think tanks, and today works for the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin, Texas. Very smart guy. I posted an article about Eric on the website, the Coast website, in which he explains why his fellow scientists are reluctant to talk about UFOs or to admit that they might be interested in the subject, something that we Coast folks know all too well. Among the headlines to come out of this MUFON gathering is this, and maybe it doesn't seem like we have all that many UFO reports these days, but according to MUFON, which has chapters, I think, in 39 countries, 2012 was actually a record year. More UFO reports came into MUFON last year than ever before. I think it was something like a 29% increase over the year previous. I thought it might be cool to get a report from the MUFON conference about what, if any, surprises were uncorked there, highlights from presentations. So I asked a friend of the program, Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds, to join us for a while this hour to talk about the conference a bit, to in effect be our eyes and ears. And so he's going to be joining me in just a few minutes. As we've mentioned a few times already this year, 2013 will mark the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Here we are almost 50 years later, and the controversy still rages. Who really killed Kennedy? Who else might have been involved? And I raise those questions because obviously a clear majority of us seem to have trouble buying the official explanation that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. As the dark anniversary of November gets closer, we'll all be thinking about the JFK murder and what it meant to our country. And we'll be hearing from various investigators and authorities and authors about the state of the research, where things stand, including why our government still won't release about 50,000 documents related to the assassination, why the American public is denied the chance to see what's in those files. You might recall after Oliver Stone's movie JFK came out, I think it was in 1991, Congress passed a law, basically said, release the files. We want to see what's in there. And I think the public has assumed that our government has complied with that law, and they haven't. There's 50,000 pages or so that still have not been released. You get different stories on when they might be made public, either 2017 or 2029. I have a feeling that they might come up with new excuses to delay the release even then. One of the most stunning accounts related to the JFK assassination comes from a real-life spook, a dyed-in-the-wool super spy, an American James Bond, if you will, who became infamous as a Watergate burglar. Former CIA operative E. Howard Hunt. Remember that name? I think longtime listeners of Coast will remember that back in 2007, some admissions were made by E. Howard Hunt to his son, St. John Hunt. I think Ian Punnett did the first radio interview with the son, and George Norrie spoke with him later on. St. John wrote about the things his father told him at the end of his life. Bond of Secrecy is the name of his book. The contents are, in one way, shocking, but then again, not really. Not to those who've studied the JFK mythology that's been put out by the FBI and the Warren Commission. I thought it may be a good time to revisit this tale and find out what, if any, new information has surfaced since the book first came out. So in hour two tonight, St. John Hunt will join us to tell the story of what his father confessed to and how it fits into what we know about that dark day in Dallas half a century later. I am very much looking forward to that discussion and hope you are too. Couple of news notes first, though. What is the deal with Cleveland? Have you been following this story out of East Cleveland, another alleged sicko busted by police there? CNN reporting tonight, three bodies have been discovered in East Cleveland. Police say, and a man is in custody in connection with the case. We're dealing with a sick individual, and we have reason to believe there might be more victims, says the mayor of East Cleveland. All three victims appear to be young black women, their decomposing bodies wrapped in layers of plastic and taped up, according to authorities. The first victim was found Friday in a garage on the same block after police received a call about a foul odor. She was found naked with indications of trauma, police say. Second victim was found in a field wearing a green hoodie, and a third wearing a leopard print leotard. The garage where the first victim was found was leased to a guy named Michael Madison. Authorities obtained a search warrant for his apartment and found additional evidence of decomposition there, they say. This suspect was later located, taken into custody without incident after a standoff at his mother's house. And who knows what else police will find before that one's all over. CNN also reporting tonight, New Zealand's capital was cleaning up Monday after a strong earthquake that shook the city and left authorities scrambling to make sure buildings are safe there. The quake, initially reported as a magnitude 6.9 quake, has later been reclassified as 6.5. That's still pretty powerful. No fatalities or serious injuries reported, but the mayor of Wellington says residents there are certainly rattled. Webmaster Lex and I have put together our usual assortment of odds and ends and items of interest for our NAPS news section posted on the Coast to Coast website. In addition to that article about physicist Eric Davis that I mentioned, there's a story about new scientific findings about sound waves and how they can cause objects to levitate. Seriously, I thought to myself, is this why flying saucers in the movies always make that weird whirring noise like in Mars Attacks? This is not sci-fi, though. It's real stuff and interesting. Also posted tonight, a simulation exercise, kind of fun, allows you to see what it would be like to fly over and through the canyons of Mars. A terrific look at Mars, what it looks like based on 3D modeling derived from photos and satellite surveillance taken on the Martian surface. Also there, a stimulating article about chimpanzees, our closest relatives in the animal kingdom, and whether or not chimps have rights. Not a simple question, not as simple as you might think. And then one other mention, and new scientific findings to bolster the idea that the Vikings were way ahead of Columbus in getting to the New World. This evidence comes from DNA studies. Looks like scientists found evidence that the Vikings may have come back from America with a Native American, at least one. They found four families in Scandinavia that have Native American DNA, and the most likely explanation is the one that's described in this article. While you are there on the website, you might want to check out the information about our Coast Insiders Club. It's a way for you to listen to your favorite Coast programs anytime, day or night. Of course, we're always glad to have you here. Stay up late with us, but if you can't, it's easy and inexpensive and gives you access to 1,000 or more archived programs. Check it out when you get a minute. Time now for a quick break. When we come back, Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds here to talk about the big MUFON symposium. Stay with us. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp. This is Coast to Coast AM. Please welcome to the program Alejandro Rojas, friend of the program, has been here a number of times, gives us updates about UFO matters from around the world. He is a radio host for Open Minds Radio, part of Open Minds production, which includes really one of the best UFO magazines in the world. If you haven't seen it, you might want to check it out. He was previously the spokesperson for MUFON and director of public education. Alejandro, you're not still in that position, are you?
No, I'm not. I was about a few months ago when the symposium got put together for a short period of time, but I'm not doing that currently.
Help clue us in on the success or failure or somewhere in between of this conference. How'd it go?
I think mostly success. I think this move for MUFON, I think, is really important. One of the things it demonstrates, which people are skeptical, you know, a lot of times people talk about, if there was something to UFOs and scientists would be interested in it, and there are. I mean, maybe not some large scientific organizations or big university studies, but there's lots of scientists interested, and this symposium was an example of that. You had physicists, you had historians, you had sociologists, psychologists. So you had the subject approach from many different aspects by PhDs, mostly professors or retired professors, who have put a lot of thought to the topic and have shared their insights and their research. So I think it is vastly important, including, you know, some of the official UFO organizations that are doing research out there. So, for example, there was a representative from Japan. He actually, Francois Louange, who has a PhD in signal processing. He works with Japan in France, which does official UFO investigation out there in France. And they've been partnering up with MUFON lately. So that's a pretty exciting project as well. So I thought, you know, it's an incredible thing. I hope MUFON continues to do more of this because really that's their charter. They are here to do science in this field.
Seems like MUFON's always had a lot of PhDs on its board, you know, acting as advisors in different disciplines, scientific disciplines. So does this represent any kind of a change to have, I think it was 7 PhDs speaking at the symposium?
It does. One of the fears in the past with MUFON and the symposiums, I've been involved with putting them together for over a decade now, is are PhDs going to attract the public? And it's always been my opinion that, yes, they will. People in the mainstream, and you know this better than anyone, pay attention to what credible people have to say. And if you market that well, then the media will get attention. To be honest, I don't know if MUFON really took full advantage of getting out there with press releases and focusing on the scientific aspect of this conference. I think if they would have done that more and earlier, they would have got more people out there and more press. But still, they did it, which is really important. And, you know, the talks can be a little more dry than your average, you know, author or someone who is perhaps more enthusiastic or has a lot to say, but credibility speaks volumes, and really there is no kind of SETI of UFOs out there, and I think there's space for that. I think the public wants that. You know, we have a lot of people interested in the topic, and I think if they continue to do that, they can gain a lot of attention and actually move this field forward, because it does seem, I think a lot of people feel it's almost this field has gotten maybe a little stagnant.
Well, it is important for people like Dr. Eric Davis to take the topic seriously and to be willing to talk about it in public. But like you said, mm-hmm. It can be dry, I guess, for the general public to hear some discussion about wormholes or something. To me, maybe to you, it's not. Maybe to Coast listeners, it's not. But maybe to the general public who doesn't have a lot of experience or hasn't been on that learning curve of UFOs, it's not that much of a grabber. But you have to admit it, it's necessary for these guys to be careful. If they come forward as scientists, they can't say, yes, we think aliens from the planet Krondak are here and they're here to eat and rape our children or something like that. They have to be careful on what they do, what they say.
Yeah. Well, luckily, only one of them has a story that's remotely close to that, and that's Dr. David Jacobs. He gets into the hybrids and maybe some of the more malicious behavior that he's witnessed, that he believes is going on. However, most of them kind of, they don't go that far, but they do, they also are mostly retired. I've interviewed a lot of these guys, and they do express that, since I'm retired, I'm going to say whatever I want. They can't do anything to me. So it is unfortunate that they're not able to do this, you know, while they're active professors, because they have to be worried about their colleagues. So that's certainly a concern. However, it's great when these people come forward, because then their colleagues can see that they're coming forward. And a lot of the professors out there learned. They sat in these people's classes. These were their mentors. These are people that they look up to. So when they see their professors retiring and then feeling free about talking about UFOs, I think they'll begin to do this. And one thing that people don't know a lot of, and I did a story on this, at least on the psychological aspect, is that there are people who have based their master's and their doctorate thesis on UFOs and or on extraterrestrials. So there is a bit of that out there in academia, but certainly, like you say, people are afraid to come forward with their interest.
Well, David Jacobs is an example of that. He wrote, I don't know if you know, it became his thesis became a book, and it's a massive and wonderful book, a classic in the field, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. And he's a great example. And he's kind of been the lone champion in that way, in which he's always been very courageous in pursuing his interest and not being shy about it.
I'll tell you what, we'll jump into some highlights from the presentations you might have heard after the break. But for the next 2 minutes or so, let's talk about this idea. MUFON issued a release that said 2012 saw more UFO reports than they've ever had before. Now, you work with a UFO organization, Open Minds. You get reports yourself. Have you seen a big jump in the reports coming your way?
Well, I think there's been a steady increase. And what I typically saw, because I always take those numbers and I crunch them, usually at least once a year, maybe periodically, I'll do a story on the numbers and some of the trends and when these increases happen. They typically happen around media. And a lot of people talk about this, sometimes when movies come out, but more so when UFO events happen and make the news, which they're doing more and more of all the time. One of the things we do on openminds.tv is that we're always putting up the headlines of the UFO stories that happen. And there are more and more of these stories, and they're serious stories from all over the world, from Australia, from the UK, and from the United States. Just, you know, local news stories on somebody local saw a UFO, somebody local took a video or posted a picture. And at these times, often MUFON is a go-to group because they have people, you know, boots on the ground all over the country. So they'll interview one of these people, and more people seem to find out about MUFON. And it's my argument, what I believe, is that then more people know that they can report their sightings. And so they're doing that more so. Some of the skeptics will say, oh, no, now they know they can go send hoaxes, or they're being influenced by the media and they're seeing UFOs that aren't really there. I don't know that we have proof either way, but in my experience from seeing the seriousness of these reports and the people who are reporting them, I think it's just more people becoming aware that they can report what they see.
It's hard for me to judge as a news guy, as a working journalist. You know, it's hard for me to be unbiased about it, but it seems like whenever I see a UFO report that comes in over one of the satellite feeds or some newspaper story or mostly a local TV coverage, it's always still with the smirk. It's the laughing anchor is kind of poking fun at it, uncomfortably so.
I think that's mostly true in broadcast, because broadcast, as you know, is a little more difficult in that you know, the body language is there. And so the broadcaster has to make an extra decision in how do I want to come across. When it comes to print, I think, or some of these stories that are just on the web, you know, the writer is a bit more anonymous in that they're not being judged, but just the information is. So those stories seem to be more straight.
Alejandro, I'm going to have to interrupt you. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the presentations at the MUFON Symposium. We're talking with Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds Productions about the big MUFON Symposium here this weekend in Las Vegas. When we come back, some highlights and headlines from that gathering. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds Communications about the Open Minds Productions about the big MUFON Symposium this weekend. Alejandro, for me, I wasn't able to stay for this presentation, but the one I wanted to see the most, and I read the paper, was the presentation about Stephenville. And I think that this is an example of the kind of good research that MUFON and organizations like MUFON can do. I mean, scientists who dismiss the whole UFO issue say there's nothing to study. This is a pretty good example that there is something to study if you have the guts to study it.
You know, it's funny you bring this one up, because if you were going to ask about what was the biggest news piece, I was going to bring up Robert Powell's talk, and that's for a few reasons. And he's the director of research for MUFON. And I was doing PR for Stephenville, and it when that happened, and it was crazy. When this went down, we had people calling. We had, you know, all the major TV shows, and I had Geraldo's people asking me if they should send cameras, where they should send them. I'm like, I don't know, you know. But once everything cooled down, once our guys were able to get some data, and this Robert Powell, who does incredible research, was able to get the radar data and get some real factual information to show that the radars, the FAA radar data, showed an unknown object in the area that witnesses had said they had seen something with characteristics moving at speeds that they had talked about. It got very little news. Luckily, Angela Joyner was able to sneak us on to the Larry King show, and Robert was able to talk a little bit about it there. But it got very little coverage. But exactly, this is real science, some real hard information that people can get down and pull up their shirt sleeves and show that there's an unknown here. This radar data showed an unknown, and thus far they've been able to verify it with other FAA radar experts that the way they analyzed it was correct, and no one's come up with an answer for that. Robert Powell, I think this is big news. Something he talked about also is that they're putting together a scientific board, and it kind of comes back to some of what we had talked about, because some of the scientists on this board don't want their names to be disclosed, including one who works for NASA currently, but they are doing work with MUFON. And for instance, one of the things they're going to do is on a regular basis, yearly, I think they're going to put together their top 10 UFO sightings. And that's something that they released at the conference. I haven't been able to flip through it completely, but I'm really excited to look at it. But here again, now we've got some output of some real data.
Give us a quick recap about Stephenville, because you were on the program with me back when that stuff was unfolding. And, you know, you had a whole bunch of witnesses who came forward, explained what they had seen. The government effectively neutralizes their testimony by denying there was anything in the sky. And yet now there's pretty solid evidence the government was flat out lying.
Right. And actually, they were caught in that. So the way it all started, a lot of people had some sightings that they had reported. So this became, at first, it wasn't a big news. Angela Joyner, who was a local writer out there, she wrote about it. We had picked it up at MUFON and just had let people know, and we had some guys looking into it a little bit. And then the AP called, and they said, hey, we wanted to do a story on this. What are you guys doing? I let them know. They wrote about Angela Joyner's story, and boom, it just became huge, and all of the press was writing about it. Mostly people said they had seen some lights in the sky that they couldn't explain, moving slowly or very fast. But they also, many of them reported seeing jets, saying they saw jets chasing this thing. So the Air Force was contacted. They said, no, we didn't have any jets in the area. But then after this really got big, a few days later, they said, oh, sorry, we overlooked that we did have jets in the area. And it looks like it could have been because they had recognized that there were a couple of FOIAs that were put in for the FAA to get the radar data. So it was actually Robert Powell and another guy named Glenn Schultz, who is a radar expert, who put in these two FOIAs. And they noticed that they both had done that, so they began working together on this. So the Air Force had to fess up. When the radar data came back, it was really interesting because not only did it show there were jets in the area, and there are some testing areas there. And so for the most part, it showed it was regular routine flights. However, there were a couple of jets that had broken off from the regular routine flight pattern and gone to the area where people had reported this object. Then also, there was an unknown, some sort of object that appeared to move very slow for a period of time. Then it appeared at a great distance away, then reappeared back in another area, which leads them to believe it moved at very great speeds, which is exactly what eyewitness testimony had said, that it moved very slowly, then it shot off at a very high speed. Then other witnesses in this area saw this thing, then again, moving very slowly. So those characteristics were very curious. And it was moving towards George Bush's ranch. I can't remember the name of the ranch right now.
Well, it's, yeah, in Crawford or something. I just thought that this was a really great example of what science can do if you apply yourself. Mm-hmm. So, folks, if you get a chance, Robert Powell is the guy who wrote this paper. It's one of the papers included in the MUFON symposium proceedings. If you want to get a copy of it yourself, you can get that and a lot of other stuff. The other, I thought it was significant that this Dr. Francois Louange, I hope I'm not butchering his name too much, that this guy was there. He's been involved in this kind of research for a long time. He worked for the European Space Agency. I don't even know what his paper was about, but I do know the significance of him being there because of who he is.
Exactly. We've been doing a lot of traveling this summer, and actually this is great because we got to speak to another gentleman, the guy who's running JPAN, who is France's UFO research organization. They actually are a branch of the CNES, which is their space agency. So it's kind of equivalent to our NASA, as if our NASA had a department, you know, investigating UFOs. So, and he spoke in North Carolina a couple weeks ago for the Center for UFO Research. Ken Center and Leslie Kane put this together. So then a couple weeks later, now we have another consultant with JPAN speaking with MUFON, and they announced that JPAN and MUFON are working together. So this is incredible because, you know, just like if we had NASA looking into UFOs, you're going to have highly qualified people doing that. And this gentleman, Francois Louange, I love to say his name. I love to say both of their names. They have a lot of history working in space sciences. Francois has a PhD in signal processing, and he has worked on satellite data processing. So his specialty really is around photography. So he looks at photographs, and he analyzes photos and had shown some photos that he felt were real and some that he had thought had problems. He says, you know, we go into this unbiased and we review things, sometimes historical cases. One of the things that people were less enthusiastic about that he shed some doubt on the McMinnville sightings, which, of course, are some famous UFO photos. But then again, he also showed some cases that they had put under heightened scrutiny, which they were not able to come up with answers for.
Dr. Albert Harrison, I've had the pleasure of interviewing Al Harrison in the past, and he tackled what I think is a really fun question. The age-old question of how would people react if we had UFO disclosure, if the aliens announced their presence, they did the proverbial landing on the White House lawn. Would society crumble? Would people panic and head for the hills? And Dr. Harrison, who has a PhD in psychology, was at UC Davis for a long time. He took this question on. Did you get to hear that presentation?
I got to interview him. I got to hear part of the presentation. One of the great things, I've got the symposium proceeding, so I was able to look at his material there as well. And one of the great things about his work, now, there's a book called After Disclosure that Richard Dolan and Bryce Stable put together, and it's a lot of fun. you know, speculating what would happen after disclosure. But the way that Albert Harrison does it, and that's what's great about academics, is pulling, you know, each lemon peel, taking an examination of each piece, and then also looking at prior research in all of these areas. And that's what's fun about the way a professor would do something. And so he takes apart things very carefully and what would be the effect, what are the good effects and what are the bad effects. You know, being unbiased in that there would be some problems if this sort of disclosure happened. However, he was able to demonstrate that he feels the positives outweigh the negatives and that if there are these secrets, then they do need to be revealed.
There would be people who would freak out, but most of us could handle it.
That it shows that most of us can handle it, and also that the benefit in inspiring people to in technology or many other areas would far outweigh any possible negatives there would be.
I mentioned about Dr. Eric Davis, and I have known Eric for a number of years. He was here in Las Vegas working with the Bigelow Organization for a long time. He's courageous in the sense that he's willing to talk about his interest in UFOs and weird stuff, and he challenges his colleagues in physics and other disciplines to do the same, that it's just as legitimate as other kinds of scientific inquiry. This paper that he delivered talked about wormholes and the possibility of using them to traverse vast distances across space or across the cosmos. Doesn't necessarily endorse the idea that aliens are getting here through wormholes, but it's an exploration that says maybe that's how it works, right?
Mm-hmm. Not only, and what's really important here is that SETI, for instance, which is, you know, I didn't make this point before, SETI, they're dry stuff. It's science, but they get thousands of people at their conferences because people love science. And they take it as this foregone conclusion that there's no way that civilizations can traverse these vast distances. But there are lots of physicists like Dr. Davis who say that's not necessarily true. And in fact, there are a lot of theoretical physicists that talk about the same things that Davis is talking about here. But it's great because he's able to, you know, put this in terms that a layman can understand, that there are lots of areas that we can look at that show scientifically that perhaps there can be ways to move these vast distances. And of course, we don't know very much compared to a civilization that could be thousands of years ahead of us. So this opens the door, and I think this sort of work is really important, these physicists, because it shows that there are scientists who don't agree with what SETI feels is just a given. That there are certainly possibilities. And of course, if you couple that with SETI's argument that there is intelligent life out there, you know, it makes the possibility of visitation much, 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 much higher.
Well, Eric Davis works, as I mentioned, at the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin. And I mean, it's one of the deepest thinking think tanks in the world. He works with a guy named Dr. Hal Puthoff, and they are exploring the idea of zero point energy and whether or not zero point might lead to some discovery that could allow us to get to the stars one day without having to travel for thousands or millions of years. Their whole reason for being, what they work on every single day going to the office, is working on exactly this. So it's not something far-fetched to them. It's something that's really real and doable.
Right. And Hal Puthoff has been doing this for years. They've got this group together that they're all putting their heads together to try to figure this out. This is the sort of thing that really needs to happen, I think, to get the scientific community to start to open up to these ideas. And I think they do, and they will, especially when you have people of these credentials. And in fact, in the UK files recently, we were able to see that the Ministry of Defense does look at anti-gravity programs. We wrote a story on this at openminds.tv, and they also had a program called Open Horizons, where they look at other sciences that are considered fringe, including zero-point energy. So they're keeping an eye on it and the development in that area. They're not completely closed down to these ideas.
We have a couple minutes left. Tell me about Open Minds, what your role is there now, what the organization is doing. For example, why do you show up at MUFON's conference if you're not really involved in it directly?
Well, we keep super busy. Really, we're more of a news agency. I mean, we are cross media. We update our website on a regular basis with stories about stuff going on in our personal research. We have our magazine where we go in depth into investigation that goes out to Barnes & Noble. We have our own YouTube channel where we're putting out all kinds of news videos weekly and on in-depth investigations or into just kind of the news of the week type of things. And then we also run the largest UFO conference in the country so that we bring in just a wide variety of topics into this. So it's important for us, and we keep an open relationships with everybody in this field, which can be difficult. But I think, you know, we love to work with everyone to highlight and demonstrate their work because really everybody has their heart in the right place. They're trying to do what's right, even if there are varying opinions. That's why I get really excited about what MUFON's doing right now, because when we're able to cover kind of the whole field and see what's going on, there's a gap in the science. And I think MUFON's the perfect organization to fill that gap and to really push this forward. And I think they can really gain a lot of ground for all of us doing that.
Well, I'll tell you, the MUFON Journal and Open Minds magazine are my two favorite UFO publications. I love your magazine. It's among, if not the best in the world in covering this stuff.
Thank you very much. We put a lot of hard work into it, and we really do some in-depth research, and we try to give people something new that they never knew before. And when we're investigating, often we uncover things that other people or we didn't know either. So thank you for saying that. And our graphic designers are just incredible. They always wow me with the incredible imagery that they come up with.
Well, it's great designs. It's slick paper. It's really a nice looking magazine. I can't believe that you possibly come close to breaking even, though, because it looks expensive to produce.
Well, luckily, I don't have the details on that, so I can plead ignorant in this one. But, you know, luckily, we do well enough where we're keeping the doors open, and we have a benefactor who, the guy who runs everything, who, thank goodness that he's here to keep this going forward. And he's always trying to come up with new ideas and how to push this field forward. Some of them are pretty outlandish, but it kind of takes thinking out of the box to move things forward. So thank goodness for John Rayo. He doesn't like to use his name often. He likes to stay in the background, but thank goodness he's here to provide this space for us.
Well, one thing I like about the magazine and the work you're doing in that format and in the radio medium is that you call a spade. I mean, for one thing, right, you don't endorse every UFO story that comes along. If it's shaky for one reason or another, you say so. If a witness or a spokesperson or some UFO huckster out there is peddling stories that don't add up, you call that as well. You call them on the carpet.
Yeah, you got to be, I think, brave in this, and you take heat from both sides. I mean, when you come forward and you talk about a story, you're going to take heat from the skeptics that are saying, why are you even considering this? But then when you find information that shows, such as in Brazil, that this is a drone, you take heat from the people that are saying, oh, you guys are now just debunking. But you have to be brave, and you know what I've found is that there is this middle ground. There are a majority of silent people out there. They're not going to go on your YouTube and light things up or make comments, but they're going to come and they're going to keep watching things because they're interested in what's going on, and they want the straight information. You know, we follow in the footsteps of brave journalists such as yourself who are out there, and like Lee Spiegel with the Huffington Post, who are sticking to the truth and journalistic unbiasedness and just getting the information out there.
Well, I like that approach, and I commend you for it. You know as well as anybody that in this field there is a conspiratorial bent, that people mm-hmm. tend to see conspiracies lurking around every corner, whether they're real or not. UFO people are notorious for stabbing each other in the back, for having turf wars, and it's hard to navigate a course down the middle because everybody hate you at one time or another.
Right, and it's hard to turn the other cheek sometimes, which is something that we do often because we feel it's more important to swallow our pride and cover the story because that's our job than to get hurt over any comments. And which reminds me of Antonio Huneas, one of our writers and a longtime researcher, was recently accused of being a reptilian alien on YouTube and by some people or using brain control. And we kind of made light of it, but he kind of got hurt because he's like, you know, I worked so hard on all of these stories, and that's what they're focusing on.
Alejandro Rojas of Open Minds, thanks for joining us. We'll be back with St. John Hunt to talk about the JFK assassination, everyone. Stay with us. More Coast to Coast AM to come.